About. It's our weekly catch-up with the National Party's Denise Lee.
Denise, how are we going?
Kia ora, I'm doing well. And you?
I am doing good, I think. Trying to avoid the smoke inhalation and the CBD, but, you know.
No, it's a little bit risky out there, I'm told, but I'm sure our excellent firefighter crew will have it all under control.
Definitely. I've seen a lot of people around the city wandering around with masks on their faces, so I think that's a pretty solid idea if you have to be in the CBD.
Yeah, it's a real shame it's happened, because it's just going to put back what was designed to be a contributor to our economy. It's going to really set back some stuff, so it's just a real shame.
Massive shame. But from what I've heard, it seems like it could have been preventable. This isn't even one of our topics yet.
Yeah, my brother-in-law is one of the crew that's been working on it. He's in the construction industry, so he knows some of the details. Let's just say it's a real shame.
Yeah, definitely. I think I've heard minor details, but of course I can't totally be sure if they're accurate yet.
Well, I'll talk to you afterwards, shall I?
That sounds good. We should jump into this. So the partnership visa. Now, we've got some recent controversy with this, particularly with the New Zealand First. Now, it's been labeled racist by the Indian community. Is this piece of legislation something that concerns you?
Well, yes, in the sense of how Immigration New Zealand is applying the criteria. Mm. So we absolutely know that you have to have criteria, right?
Yep.
You have to have very clear processes and the ways that partnership applications work, and then, you know, how to what are all the do's and don'ts, and then if you are rejected, your application is rejected, then why that happens. But we would say that there's, and there could be, some little bit of room here for discretion in some cases.
Mm.
It's very, Immigration New Zealand has to do this all the time, the absolute black and white one size fits all approach can be problematic. This is actually a real familiar thing for me, Laura, because I get through in my MP office a large workload of immigration and visa decline, so people coming into my office, and it's very stressful, really stressful for people, but particularly partnership visas where people are in a relationship and they just can't quite get through to Immigration New Zealand the proof. But, you know, in many cases they're genuine. So somewhere along the line, we're saying that the government should probably think about a little bit more of a discretion in some cases. What we're hearing now is an absolute crackdown in a black and white scenario.
Yeah, because the figures at the minute from Immigration New Zealand showed 10 out of 87 applicants for culturally arranged marriage visas had been approved at the end of August. So that's a very low approval rate.
Yeah, that's right. And the average processing time, by the way, is 9 months.
Mm.
So waiting that long for a decline, so you don't even know you're declined for 9 months. So waiting that long to even find out you're declined, that really does impact individuals' lives, well, partners' lives.
Yeah, would be very panic-inducing. I just, particularly from the national perspective, national kind of has this history of being very pro-immigration. Why is that?
Well, I don't know if I'd categorise it like that, Laura. I think we're willing to keep reviewing at the time to see what, you know, we're a small trading nation at the bottom of the world. We absolutely need really fantastic quality immigrants to help us foster a great country and a great economy. So as we're reviewing, or we did review when we were in government, constantly immigration levels and see what we needed at the time, how to address skills shortages, how to address labour workforce gaps. So, you know, over a period of time, we would just, I guess we'd call it fluid and reactive in positive ways.
Mm. What would you, your definition of a, sorry, what was the word again, beneficial immigrant, or what was that word you just used?
I can't remember.
That's all right. You kind of insinuated that there is some kind of immigrants that you would value higher than others. What criteria do you place on that?
Yeah, no, I definitely didn't say that there'd be ones that I'd value higher than the others. The context from any remark I'd make on immigration law is it depends on what category it is, right? So we've got several categories that people can apply under. Sometimes they're for skill shortages that we've got going on at the time. We've had that with the aged care sector, with the horticulture sector. Sometimes it's people bringing in substantial income because we know that we need the investment. So, I mean, that's what the rules are there for, and we're very happy with the rules as they are. But in this particular case, the partnership category, we think that there's been too much of a black and white crackdown and that there could be more room for discretion. And I know that, as I said before, because I see many of these declines in my office. Mm. And my own research tells me that there could be some discretion applied.
Mm. This is going to be kind of a hot, sensitive subject or question, I should say, but I've had a comment made to me recently that National seems to be very pro-immigration, but then sometimes indulges in some xenophobic rhetorics. If we look back at the UN Migration Pact, for instance, is this something that where kind of is the line for National when it comes to other cultures?
Yeah, no, look, that's really offensive to hear xenophobia used in conjunction with our party. That's just completely categorically wrong. We're very clear on that UN Migration Pact, and that is we don't want to lose our own autonomy to decide our own future as a country. So we don't want to sign over that much autonomy to the United Nations. Mm. Pretty simple.
All right. I'll shift on to the farming interim for farmers not to have to pay for carbon emissions till 2025. Now, this kind of seems like a step in the right direction. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree. So it's a practical, good step, and it allows the farming community to come up with the solutions themselves, and that's exactly where it should be, because they've never, ever said, right, you know, we're digging our heels in, we're not doing this, we're, you know, turning our head the other way. They've always demonstrated capacity and ability to adapt and do better, to look at science-based options, to really go for innovative solutions, which is why, of course, we have, you know, a few issues with, say, the Green Party not wanting to look at GMO legislation, genetically modified legislation, for reluctance to look at new scientific developments, most of which, if not all, are designed to significantly reduce emissions. And we know, you know, a big example that people would probably know about is getting new GM grass, the type of grass that that herds can consume and reduce methane. So that's while we're really supportive of it, there's just we'd really like to see farmers backed a little bit more to do this, and that comes in many different forms.
Mm. What kind of backing would you be looking for?
Well, I mean, first of all, the flavour and the culture of how the government goes about this. You know, up until now, we've had a lot of questions in the House to Damien O'Connor and other ministers with behaviour around consultation on the zero carbon bill. You know, there's a lot of evidence coming out from the farming community. They feel really under the pump and fingers pointed their way. So part of it is just, you know, I'm not trying to be ethereal here, but look and feel for how you back, and this is a good step towards it, Laura, it is. So you're saying to the farming sector, hey, we think you guys can come up with your own solutions and we're giving you time to do it. One thing, though, that's interesting is that the government has given itself a legal backstop. And they could still bring agriculture into the ETS as early as 2022.
Yeah.
So we'll be keeping a close eye on that. If you're going to do this and do it right, why do you need this little backstop?
Well, I think the reason why they've put that in place is, particularly if they're not seeing any changes in the agriculture sector, if it doesn't seem like we're having steps forward moving away from carbon emissions.
Yeah, well, but I'd argue, well, why do they think that's not going to happen? We're already the most efficient food producers in the world.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that we are the most sustainable food producers.
Well, no, I think the two go hand in hand. You know, if you're efficient, then you've got time, space, and even the funds, I'd argue, to do the things that you need to do to meet our Paris Climate Agreement commitments. So, look, at the bottom, at the end of the line, must be a Friday.
Yeah, it's a Friday.
we just want to have farmers that are not put at a disadvantage, right, to international competition.
Mm-hmm.
We will have and would have the only farmers in the world to be part of an ETS. So this is kind of world-leading stuff that we're doing. So let's do it at the pace and in a partnership and in a way that everyone feels supported. And, hey, you know, this is a good first practical step.
Mm. And, of course, with that five-year period kind of in mind, it's going to cross over into the next election. I'm not sure if you've discussed this amongst your party yet, but is this something you would be looking at continuing if your party was elected in the next election?
Look, we haven't talked about that and answered that, but my guess is that we would be. You know, you're hearing from me today that we're supportive of the practical step that this means, and that it unleashes the farming sector to do their best to come up with solutions. So, look, I can't see any way that we wouldn't be supportive of continuing that. But as you said, we haven't had that conversation. We're busy taking on board this one.
Yep, lots of things happening in Parliament all the time. I will shift on to our last subject, which is the end-of-life choice bill. It's going to referendum. Now, I know this is something you didn't personally support, and we briefly touched on this a while back, but can you tell us a bit about why you didn't support that referendum?
I was like 57, well, 56, I guess, other MPs, in that it has been months and months and months, right? 40,000 submissions. That's just this go. There was sort of a health select committee inquiry 2 years ago, thousands then. This topic is very big, very complex, really full on. There have been hundreds of amendments to the bill, and I've had to read every single one and get my head round which medical practitioner and which overseeing body, and you know, just the details are just absolutely full on. And I see it as my responsibility to get my head around this and to vote accordingly. I think that it's going to be a huge job for the public to understand the nuances of the bill come next year. So I didn't think personally that I should shirk my responsibility as someone in this role to work through this piece of legislation cause by cause. So that was my particular stand, and as I said, 56 other MPs agreed with me, but 63 went the other way and supported New Zealand First. I think it's interesting that New Zealand First basically wants to send out everything to a referendum, and I don't think we should be giving away that responsibility.
I think it's quite interesting with this referendum, because obviously this is a conscience vote amongst most parties. So with it being a conscience vote and not following party lines in Parliament, why should it not be a matter of a conscience vote for the public?
Well, just for the reasons I outlined, I guess, prior, Laura, I feel really strongly that it's a very complex issue. It's literally about life and death.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's we've gone through changes in the bill. So I didn't vote no the entire way. There were some amendments from David Seymour that I agreed with on a possibility that the bill might pass. I then had a look at some of the amendments to try and improve it, and I supported those. So there's nuances, I guess you could say, and I absolutely trust the public to make great decisions all the time, but in this instance, I think it's our responsibility, and it has been for months and months. The public did have 40,000 people had a very detailed chance to have their say, and we've read all their say, and it's our turn now.
Mm. Is it not potentially something that we should attempt to decide on as a country rather than leaving it to a very select few number of people?
Well, I guess you could view Parliament that way, or you could view Parliament as, you know, a whole bunch of people who have been elected by the public. So, you know, there is one big giant referendum. It's called an election.
Yep.
And, you know, I take very seriously that approximately 65,000 people can vote in my area and vote me in to make decisions. And I have to make decisions every day on their behalf. Mm. And this one, I think, is one of them.
Mm. I'll end on our final question, which I kind of, someone gave me a last minute idea of something to ask you. I'm not sure how much you're going to like this question, but what is your ideal date?
Ooh, well, I am single, so this is relevant. ideal. It would be something that involves doing something, so I'm not just sitting around twiddling my thumbs. I'm assuming this date is someone that I've never dated before.
Yep.
And they're just kind of sitting across the table and twiddling thumbs. And even though I love a really good conversation, don't get me wrong, I'd like to, you know, like, I don't know, get a jet ski on the harbour for, do an hour's hire and then go for dinner. Or... and I go out to a beach where they've got like a cool ice cream shop out there. Just something that's not, I don't know. It just feels so metro and standard to just go to a restaurant and sit across the table from someone. Does that make sense?
No, I totally agree. I think you have to do something before you go and like sit down to talk. Because what do you talk about otherwise? Oh yeah, what do you do for a job? Like all that kind of boring stuff.
Yeah, and you really get the cut of someone's cloth when they're out there amongst it. And it doesn't have to be crazy adventure, but just something, you see how they relax and it tells you something.
Mm, definitely. Well, I'm looking forward to speaking with you next week. Actually, no, you won't be speaking with me next week. I'm taking a few weeks off. But you will be speaking.
Shame.
I'll actually put them on air too.
Hi there. How we doing?
Hey, very good.
This is two. You'll be speaking with him next week.
I'm really, really looking forward to it.
I'll look forward to it too.
We'll see you. We'll be chatting with you next week, Denise.
All right. You take care, guys. See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
The National Party's Denise Lee on 95 BFM.